Today's daf is daf kuf lamed vav mesachet bava batra. We're holding perek yesh no chanim, and we've been discussing the way in which it's possible to create a last will and testament or the equivalent of a last will and testament. So either by actually having a daitiki, which would be as a getter of matnat shchid mira, which one would be able to be makne even without typical kinyan, or by creating a living will. Now yesterday we brought, not from the Mishnah, but we brought from the Braita, that there's such a thing as doing the equivalent of a daitiki. So we said, what would be considered to be a matana that would be the equivalent of a daitiki? Where he said, v'ayom aleachar mita. L'maisa, today, the Mishnah actually wants to describe this mechanism, and we're getting into the details of exactly the way it needs to be phrased and how it works. That's the beginning of today's sugya. So begins the Eilaka Mishnah, kotev nechasav livanav. So if somebody now is attempting to give over property to his children, now what is that supposed to mean? I mean, property anyway would go to his children. So in a typical case, a man would be remarrying later in his life, and in the event that he has children with this second wife, it's a secondary family to him, and he doesn't want to share the full Yerusha with whatever children he'll have with her. And Memela, he wants to make certain that his original family is protected. And so what he does is he writes now a living will. And we already saw the basic mechanism for living will is to be mavir, the reshus, on the actual property now, but to maintain all the rights of the peirot until he himself dies. That's called the living will. And of course, that gets into the very fundamental question we had so many times as to what the Seder of ownership is, where you have kinyan peres. Is kinyan peres kinyan aguf tami? Is it not kinyan aguf tami? Does it give you rights of sale? Does the one who has the guf, when someone else has the peres, have an ability to sell it? These were all issues that we've discussed many, many times. The fundamental place where it all starts was the question regarding mikra bikurim, if you recall. Famous machlokas, which we're going to have again. If somebody has a kinyan peres, is he maybe vikere, or is it considered to be not the Oretz Asher Natatali? That's where we had the first machlokas. From there, we saw that there's all types of diukim that need to be made, and we'll briefly go through them again towards the end of today's daf. So if someone wants to achieve that, to be kotev nechasav lebenav, to prevent now a watering down of the inheritance, so tzarich sheyichtov mehayom uleachar mita. He needs to write in the contract that he's writing this to Bichal from today and after his death, which we then interpret to mean, since that doesn't seem to mean anything, it's contradictory, either it's today or it's after his death, so we interpret it to mean that the guf of the karka he's transferring today, but the peres he's going to retain the rights on as long as he's alive. That's how we understand it. So says Rabbi Yossi, says you don't need to write from today. Because, as we'll see in the Gemara, the very fact that there's a date on the contract is the equivalent of saying from today. And this was also a big machlokes that we had, whether it's Zman or Shoshtar is Mochiach Alav, and that we'll once again review in today's sugya as well. Now, HaKotev Nechasav Livno Liachar Moto. So in a case like this, the implications would be that Ha'av Eino Yachol Limkor Mipnein Shein Ketuvim Lebin. The father cannot sell the property because he's already written over the property to the son. But the Bein Eino Yachol Limkor Mipnein Shein Bereshut Ha'av. The son, on the other hand, can't sell the rights, the practical rights to the property, meaning any income that would come from the property, because the father's holding on to that. And therefore, there's no way, really, for him to transfer meaningful ownership to this property. But what he could do is each one can sell the element that they have. So if Machara Av, if the father would sell, so then that would mean that he's selling the peirot until he dies, because that's all he has in it at this point. So he would be Mechurim, the rights to the peirot of the property would indeed be Mechurim Achi Yamut, at which point he had already given them over to his son. And Machar HaBein, if the son sells, then indeed the rights to the property in terms of what will ultimately accrue to him are his, but meanwhile he can't do anything practical with it because, I mean, whatever he does with it, rents it out, the father gets the money, plants, the father gets the money, whatever he'll do, he's not going to be able to make any money. So he won't have any real rights to it, Achi Amuta Av. When the father dies, then he will get the rights really to the peros. Now, this is not 100% clear. Is it coming to him by definition in his ownership of the karka, or is it coming to him through the son, that the son will convey it to him? The difference will be whether the son is alive. If at the time that the father dies, the son is alive, fine. So then obviously the son had already sold the rights in this karka to the peres that would eventually be his. But if he never lived long enough to be zocheh to those peres, maybe he can't sell it. Or maybe the rights to the karka include the rights to those peres when they will become available, so that the one who's currently maintaining his hold on the peres, namely the av, is only seen as standing in the way. But remember that he's not in the way, so then the peres would be part of the squis to the karka. That we'll see is a question of the Gemara later on. Asks the Gemara, but what good is it to write mehayom alachar mita? You're saying, if I write mehayom alachar mita, so be'etzem, this is the way that it's conveyed. The goof is conveyed. Hayom alachar mita, the perot are conveyed. But, I mean, that's certainly not the only way of interpreting this. I mean, it could be the guy's crazy. It could be that the guy changes his mind. I mean, in other words, he said me'ayom with the intent to actually give it me'ayom. Then he says le'achar mita, or maybe he meant it as some sort of condition. In other words, the gift is chal today, but only upon such time that I'm no longer living. But then, I mean, but you're interpreting it like there's no question. The goof is today and the peres are later. I mean, the truth is, where is this very nogea where we see that it's not at all clear what it means by gittin? So if somebody gives a get, me'ayom alachar mita, that should be exactly this case. And it doesn't work by getting. It leaves us hanging as to the meanings. Why does it work over here? Therefore, as the Moravachi katan, me'ayom alachar mita, ma'yhavi, hatznan, it's a ferish mishnah. In getting, that if somebody writes a get with exactly this language, me'ayom alachar mita, so the did is gate ve no get. If a gate ve no get means that it's a suffix gate, in which case, the imate, so if the guy dies without children, so she still needs chalitza, because it's a suffix. She may have been an ashesish at the time that he died, and therefore be skukali yibu. But on the other hand, she can't be mityabemet, because she may not be, in which case the brother is an erva forever. So she can't be mityabemet. But so why does it work over here? I mean, it should create the same set of sfeikas that it creates by gittin, and we'll be left with the whole problem of amotzi bechaverah. Araya will have to resort to basically doing what we know we can do. But you're saying that it works as a living gift. No, this is the Gemara, because it's very simple. By gittin, us a misafkalan, we don't know what is meant. The reason we don't know what is meant is because there's no reasonable explanation. Because a get either is a get or isn't a get. But a sale, there's no such thing. What do you mean a sale either is a sale or isn't a sale? That's not true. A sale consists of various elements. So there could be a sale to the rights of the property, and there could be a sale to the rights of the peres. And there's no contradiction at all. So by the get, when you set up this tension in your language, so then we have to consider the question of whether it's a charot or whether it's a tznai, which makes a tremendous difference. If it's charot, then the get is a chal at all, because it's not possible to give a get. Liachar mita. So it sounds like I wanted to give a get mi'ayom, but I don't really want it to be a get mi'ayom. I'm writing it mi'ayom, but it shouldn't be chal liachar mita. There's no such thing as a get that's chal liachar mita. It no longer has the ability to be megarish. Masha ain kein, we're certainly not going to interpret a sale, which has a very reasonable interpretation, in a strange way that leaves us to be misupak. We know exactly what the guy means. And therefore, there's no question from the shayla of get. Let's see that inside. So hatam, when it comes to git and misafkalan, he leaves us hanging as to the meaning. Because we don't know whether it's a tznai, or whether he really means that it should be chaliachar mita, or chazorah. Therefore, it remains a suffix. Avalacha, but over here it's a perfectly reasonable explanation that what he's saying is, I'm giving you a two-stage mechira. So the first stage is that you're going to the karka as its goof, but you won't get any practical rights to it until the achar mita. What's wrong with that phraseology? And memela, in there, it's perfectly kosher. So hachi karmel goof akadim yom and purely achar mita. Now, for some reason, Rabbi Yossi says, eno tzarich. Why, if a guy says just liachar mita, we should say, well, clearly this document is invalid. I mean, a person can't give over something liachar mita. So how could Rabbi Yossi say that that's kosher? So what happened was that Rabbi Bar Avua became ill, and Rav Huna Reb Nachman were going to be mavakar chayla. So Ola Gabe Rav Huna Reb Nachman. So Amalei Reb Nachman, Rav Huna Reb Nachman, on the way in to Rabbi Bar Avua, Rav Huna whispers to Reb Nachman, look, you know, it's maybe our last chance to ask him whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi in this sugya or not. So ask him, Yavok Rabbi Yossi, Inalok Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Nachman said, what do you mean? I don't understand, Rabbi Yossi doesn't make any sense. What do you mean ask if the Allah is like Rabbi Yossi? I can't ask a question when I don't even know what I'm talking about. I mean, if I'm going to discuss it with them, I should ask maybe what the reason is, Rabbi Yossi. But it's a little bit jumping the gun to ask him if the Allah is like Rabbi Yossi, pretend I know what I'm saying. So time to Rabbi Yossi lo yada. Now, Allah, why am I going to ask him Allah about something that doesn't even make any sense to me? Omar Leis, Rufuna says, look, we've got no time to argue about this now. You ask him what the halacha is, I'll tell you what the reason is afterwards. But right now, this is a chance we have to just ask him, I'll fill in the missing information. So therefore, Omar Leis, ad boy mine halacha ilo. You just ask him what the halacha is, he'll respond to you. But the timing, I'll tell you, when we get out, I'll tell you the svar. So he asked him, boy mine. Omar Lei, so Rabba Baravua told him, Ochi Omar Rav Halacha Rabbi Yossi, that indeed we passed like Rabbi Yossi. But at an afka, when they came out, Ravuna said, okay, now I'll explain it to you. Omar Lei, I know time to Rabbi Yossi, the Omar Zimano Shishtar Machiachala. It's very simple. Rabbi Yossi holds that you don't have to say Mihayom, because why else did you write a date? If the shtar really meant that it's only going to be chal after my death, so what are you putting in today? What do you intend to drop that today? Don't date it, Bichlal, because the date has no legal meaning. So Mamela, the only reason to view the date on the shtar as being something that needed to be put there is because he's transferring something today. So what's he transferring today if he said La'achar Misa? So it boils down to the same thing as saying, Mi'ayom La'achar Misa. Therefore, says Rabbi Yossi, why bother mentioning Mi'ayom? Obviously Mi'ayom. Otherwise, why is there Hayom on the shtar? By writing a date, you're saying Hayom, aren't you? Otherwise, it's a meaningless thing. You could write any date in the world on it. Tanya Nami Ach and Rabbi Yossi Rehameh Tzarech, and there's a bright in which Rabbi Yossi himself explained the Shita. You don't need to write Mihayom, Mipnesh is Manu Shishtar Mochiach Alav. In writing a date, you are saying today, this and this date, this and this hat. Vaymine Rav Amirim Nachman. Okay, I understand where the document that he writes is the document of conveyance. So this is the shtar. It's not that this document is attesting to an event. This document is meant to be a shtar hakna. So if in the shtar hakna it says now that this is being done today, so Rabbi Yossi holds that means something's being done today. It's got to be that the goof was transferred. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you'd have to say that I want to affect the kinyan that I hereby do. Because you're saying, I hereby do this kinyan. You want to affect it today. If you don't write today, and you only write Le'achar Misa. So the understanding is that we are signing today that Le'achar Misa, this should be an effective kinyan, which it's not, because you can't give a kinyan Le'achar Misa. That's what Rabbi Yossi holds. But I'd like to know is, but how about if you write a different kind of document? Write a document in which the Aden attest to the fact that a Kenyan Sutter was made to effect this giving over of the property. So then would Rabbi Yehuda argue in such a case? Or would Rabbi Yehuda say, I mean, since obviously there was a Kenyan, they're testifying to the fact that they were Kanimiya, they Kanina Mine, and so over there, I mean, this is Kanina Mine, and this is the date that Kanina Mine, so it must be that they were Kanina Mine today. So when they say what's supposed to be given the Achar Misa, obviously that must mean the Paris. Or would Rabbi Yehuda even argue when they say that we actually went out and made the Kenyan?
Part of the deal was given beforehand that the after the death is okay to then the
rest of it, you mean the Paris? Yeah, Paris. Because of course, if I own the karka, so the Paris elect it was rented out to somebody else. So that the moment somebody else disappears, now the karka reverts to me. That's right. So over here, where I have a hakna, ask the Rama, if the shtar itself records a kinyan, doesn't say, with this document I convey le'achar moti such and such a field. That, Rabbi Yehuda says, well, it says le'achar moti, so it's not meaningful. But rather, the shtar says, we hereby testify that we made a kinyan today, that this person should have rights le'achar misa. What do you mean, you made a kinyan today? So if you made a kinyan today, it means that there was something that was mukna today. What was that? The goof for the sada. So over there, Rabbi Yehuda would also be made a maybe. What Yerusha? A kinyan. In a shtar hakno'a, where the... Fine, whatever the ratzon of niftar can achieve. It doesn't achieve very much. It can't subvert the Yerusha. Good. So now, what would be the halacha? So Rav Papa said, I'll tell you, it's not so simple. It depends, actually. So Rava answered, Rabbi Nachman answered, Bakna inotzari. If it's a shtar that records a kinyan, then even Rabbi Yehuda would be made. Rav Papi says it's not so simple. Ika akneyata detzarech, v'ika akneyata lelo tzarech. So what does it depend on? It depends on the way that the shtar is constructed. If the shtar is constructed in the order of akne ukanina mine, so then lo tzarech. If it's constructed along the lines of kanina mine the akne, so then it is tzarech. Now, what this means is a lot of different shitas and what in the world this is supposed to mean. The Rashbam's shita is that basically every shtar is constructed with a description of the events at the end of the shtar again. So you have to be chazer and say what took place. Now the question is whether you wrote ukanina mine, which is the standard version, at the end of the shtar, or whether you wrote it at the beginning of the shtar. Tosfos doesn't like that because anyway, whenever we're chayzer ben yonah b'shtar, at the end of the shtar, it never adds information. Therefore, he tines that it can't be referring to the standard closing. It's got to be referring to something that's written before your chayzer ben yonah b'shtar at the end. Okay, but ignoring that particular question, what the Rashbam understands is like this. A typical shtar of aknayata begins with saying that we were in such and such a place, and this guy told us to go ahead and havu edim, that you be witnesses, uknu mimeni v'kitvu v'chitmu. So it begins with that standard language. That's the lashon of aknie, meaning that he was makna to the edim, do this, I'm giving you this, that now you take a kinyan tzeder, I'll pick it up, and that'll be a sign that that's supposed to be done. And then they close, and then it's what is supposed to be done, of course, is the middle. And then it closes with, and we did it. Ukanina mine, and we went ahead, and we were kind of from him on that basis. And therefore, there's an indication over there that the event actually took place. Here's what we were mitzvah to do. We did it, and therefore we were miyapik kochot. Since it mentions now two levels of kinyanim, the initial kinyan that he told us to do and what it is that we went ahead and we did, so that means that apparently something happened. So if something happened, so then the date attests to something having happened on that day, which means that the additional part of the Achar Mitah must be a secondary event, namely the Perot, that is then accrues to the person after the death of the father. So over there, even Rabbi Yehuda would say, okay, so then obviously, I mean, if they're saying they did a kinyan, what kind of kinyan did they do? Must be that it already happened. Masha Einkein, if he inverts it, so he doesn't write at the beginning Akne and then Uknina, which shows now a complete commitment and an additional strength now that he's given. So if you wrote at the beginning of the shtar, Kanina, we were kind of from somebody on the basis of his having said to be Akne, so then that just sounds like we went ahead and we accepted his commitment to achieve what is mentioned at the end. But when Liachar Moto? So we took his commitment today with a sutter that we should see to it that indeed after he dies that this is what's going to happen, that his son should get this property. So then, if you didn't write Mehayom, it's Mashma that all we did today was register his commitment to see to it that such an event should take place. But such an event can't take place. So Mamela, Reb Yehuda Tainas, it's a meaningless shtar. Aye, says Rav Papi, so then why does it have a date on it? The date is just there to be able to remind the Adim that the actual Kenyan to do it had taken place and so on. But it doesn't show that there was an actual Kenyan unless they repeat the fact that we went ahead and achieved something. Why are you saying we achieved something? What did you achieve? What you achieved was the giving over of the guf. And even a Rebuta would be made. You can see why Tosfos says, and the truth is later on it's mashma from the Rashbam also, that he doesn't mean that this is the standard minyanei shel shtar, because then it's not adding anything. But he's saying it's an addition. So you can understand why, if you wrote an addition. So then Enoch Inami, what are you telling? So what did you do? You're saying, and we did it. What did you do? Must be that you gave over the goof today, and that's why it says, today we were Kanina. Okay? So you have to analyze the writing carefully in the shtar. Maska Ravuda Misura, you know, this is awfully, did I say, finish saying, let's say it inside. So there's Papi Omar, Iknak Niyata, the Tzarek, Vikak Niyata, the Lo Tzarek. It depends the way it's constructed. If you first wrote Aknaya and you closed the shtar by saying Huknina Mine, then clearly you're saying, and we gave him the additional benefit of that additional kinyin. So then even Reb Yudah is made a little tzara. But if you wrote Kinyin Mine first, then we understand that the Aknye is not an addition, but rather it's saying what we will ultimately achieve le'akramoto. So then if you didn't write Mehayom, so then it's meaningless, says Reb Yudah. So therefore it's tzara. Markiv lo Reb Chanina Misur. Reb Chanina Misur did not like Reb Papi's nuances over here. Because he's saying, you know, Reb Papi, it's very interesting that Rava doesn't know what the din is. And he's discussing it with Reb Nachman. And you're claiming that the people who write contracts, they know more than Rava knows, and they know more than we know. I mean, you're telling us this tremendous chiddush over here. It's very subtle. It really depends whether it's written in a lashon. I didn't understand. We're talking about over here guys that they're basically secretaries. So if Rava doesn't know, and Reb Nachman is clearing what the din is, Reb Papi's giving this whole fancy lumdus, it makes sense to say that therefore it's meaningful. If the people who wrote the shtar, they are aware of it. That sounds very unlikely to me. Well, we don't know anything about this, but the Safri, the Dayane, the Safri, the ones who are the secretaries who write out the shtaras, they know. So you know what? They did a little experiment. They went and asked the Sofrim and the Besdin of Abaya, and they knew perfectly well. They asked them, so how do you write up? They said, well, you have to write the Akneh first, Kanin in the end, because otherwise you'd have to write Mi'ayom. Oh, and then they went and they asked the Sofrim and Rava's court. They also knew. So Halakha L'maisa, the bureaucrats are indeed more aware. That's their business. So they make it their business to know. So you don't know, but they do know. Big deal. Interesting little experiment. Ravuna Bereda Rav Yeshua Amar. Bein Aknaya v'Kanina Mine, or Bein Kanina Mine v'Aknaya. I don't care how it's written. Lo Tzarich. If it's a shtar that records a kinyan being made, it's crazy to say a kinyan was made about the fact that we will one day make a kinyan with... I don't believe that Reb Yudah would hold that. Reb Yudah would say that they're there. Also, I agree that Zman Shastar Mokiach, something must have happened. They can't just be, they're making this big deal about the fact that they made a Kinyan, that someday, I don't believe that's what it means. If it's written as a Zichron Dvarim, now Zichron Dvarim indeed is not binding. So if you wrote the language that the modern Zichron Dvarim is based on the original Aramaic shtar of Duchrin Pidgami, which is Zichron Dvarim. So if it's the shtar that goes with the language, quote, Ubeduchrin Pidgami Dahavi Ba'antpana, in as a Zichron of the things that took place in front of us. Now that already doesn't sound like anything happened. But that the whole point was to be koveya that something will happen, but in a chinami. So then Reb Yudah would say, so this is Bedavka saying that he was trying to convey it le'achar misa, and therefore would be meaningless. So they're pleading. Omer Rav Kana said, you know, this whole discussion of the original question that Rava asked Reb Nachman and the whole business with Reb Papi, I said it all over in front of Reb Zvid Minarda. Now, I'm written on Shmaita Kamehda Reb Zvid Minarda. And he said, boy, you guys sure get things complicated. We have it very simple. The way that we recorded this conversation is not that it was a question that Rava had and then we had all these complicated answers. It was that Dafka Rava was quoting the halacha from Reb Nachman, but it reads like this, quote, Omar Rava Omar Reb Nachman, if it's a shtar hakda'ah, so then, enot tzarich, according to Reb Yudah. I don't care whether it's written aknayu kanina mine, I don't care if it's written kanina mine v'aknaye, lo tzarich. Whereas if it's written as a zichron dvorim, as bedukron pidgami da'ave ban pana, so there Reb Yudah indeed argues on Reb Yosef. Hakotev nechasav livno li'achar moto. So what we said is like this. In the case where somebody had written out a living will like this, and now the son goes ahead and sells it, so he can't sell any of the rights until the father dies. But it says over there, Ein ban klum achi amuta av. Now the question is, how does that work? Is it achi amuta av whether or not the son is alive? Or does it mean achi amuta av and the son is then yoresh him? Once the son is now yoresh the rights to the peres, then those rights go over to the guy who bought the rights of the karka. But if the son himself was never yorish, the rights to the peres, so then it would go directly to the yorshim of the av, all the yorshim of the av. So then how could the son sell something that belonged to him? So he sold the rights, but meanwhile somebody else was yorish to peres. So the portion of the peres, maybe that he was yorish, as one of the many heirs of his father, perhaps he could give to the guy. But to give it over the whole thing and to prevent the other Yorsh from getting it, maybe not. So how does that work? Itma. Machar haben b'chayei av umet haben b'chayei av. Here's the problem. If the son dies in the lifetime of the father, so then the question is, what would be now the rights of the buyer at that time? It's a machlokas. And we understand what this involves immediately. It involves the famous machlokas of Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf, essentially. So Rabbi Yochanan Tainas, lo kana lokea. Even after the father dies, if there is no kinyan at all that the lokeach gets, actually the main ownership on the property was the ownership of the father. Father dies, all of the children are yerushim. Because over here, the son was mesalek himself. The father had originally made a deal. And the deal was, I'm going to give you the goof today. And that way, when I die, you'll get the peres that are shayach to that goof. But so that would have worked to give it to this particular son as a living will as opposed to the other children. So there I made it. The problem is over here that he sold that right. He gave that right away. So he was basically misalik himself from this goof of the karka. The father had never said he's going to give the goof of the karka to somebody else. The peres of the karka to somebody else who owns the goof of the karka. So mamela, the yorshim, and now get it, according to Rabbi Yochanan. He never received it to convey it to the buyer, and he doesn't retain the rights to the goof of the karka, which were what the father was willing to let him have, li'achar meisa. So mamela, where was the lokeach ever kone? The only time that the Mishnah is referring to meita av, that the lokeach, the zeicher, is where, in fact, the son didn't die b'chaye ha'av. But if the son died b'chaye ha'av, he never gets to it to be able to go ahead and to be marish, to be makne. He took a risk. Yeah, he took a risk. He was assuming the father would die, and the father didn't die first. Yeah, what can you do? Well, maybe worth something for him for the guy to buy back the gufa peres, the gufa karka. You never heard of risk taking. I took a risk. So, I mean, that's always the value of these kind of deals, or always include the amount of money that he paid. He always takes into consideration the level of risk, obviously. He pays a lesser amount because he's taking the risk. As the Gemara Marcus goes through these type of deals. Resh Lakish Amar Kana Lokeach. So what's the base of Machlokas? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lo Kana Lokeach. He holds that Kinyan Peres, that the father retained for himself, is basically a Kinyan Aguftam. Therefore, the only rights that the Ben had to sell were rights that would ultimately become his, and that he's selling now along with the Guf of the Karka. Since those rights never did become his, so it turns out that the Lokeach never ever bought them. Because these were the Iker rights to the Karka. If the son hadn't sold it, you see, and he hadn't taken himself away from the ownership, so then, even though the Ben died b'chayav, the heirs of the Ben would have been Yorish. But in this case, why should he get anything? And therefore, the guy is left out on a limb. Whereas Reish Lakish Amar Kana Lokeach, because he owns Kinyan Peros that the father owned, or Lavke Kinyan Aguftami, in which case, this was a perfectly valid Mechira. The only problem is that the father was in the way of making profits, because he was, so to speak, renting it. Okay, so the moment the renter isn't there, so now the buyer has the property back to rent to somebody else. Why do I need to be conveying you an Iker Kinyan in the field at this point? I already have the Iker Kinyan in the field. Says the Gemara, you know, but this is an old machlokas. You know, if Lika Bachada Zimna, we know this machlokas about the Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, the Gabi Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. The fundamental place was back in Seder Zroim, the Itmar. Hamocher Sadeh LePeirot, somebody who buys from a person who only sold the rights to the Peres of a field. So now the buyer, he harvests his harvest. He needs to bring Bikurim. Does he bring Bikurim with the Kriya? Can he say, the Aretz Asher Natatali or not? Is it his? So that is Gufa, the fundamental machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan says, yes, he can. He really owns this card. So Rabbi Yochanan, maybe the Kere, he could say, Ha Damash, Natatali Hashem, these are the Reishis Pri of what's mine. Reish Lakish Amar, no, he has to be Mevi. But he can't say, Ami Adamash and Atatali. He could say, Asher Tavi Me Artzecha, yeah, because it was the Yanik of that Oretz that gave it to him. But he can't say, Asher Atatali. So, Mamela, there's no din of Kriya. You remember that we had a big machlokas we showed you about whether this really is an afkamina that's a diaraisa, or whether it's only a derabona that it should still be maybe. But that midiraisa, it's all one thing. It's havav kriya. If there's no havav kriya, then there's nothing. Okay, but in any event, this is again how the Rashbam learns. Two separate chiyuvim. One is a din in yanika sakarka, which is eretz. The other is a din in admasecha, and that's the adom asher natateli, and that he doesn't have. So that's the mitzvah of kriya, and that he doesn't do. So he's maybe veino kore. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar maybe the kore because he holds kinyan peres kinyan aguvdami. Reish Lakish Amar maybe veino kore because he holds kinyan perod lavke kinyan aguvdami. So why do we, you're not adding anything with this machlokas? What are we bringing it for? Why did they discuss it again? Amar lecha Rabbi Yochanan, no, because I certainly would not have known about this particular case. There's something unique about this case. Afagav de ba'alma kinyan peres kinyan aguvdami. Look, it's true. That generally speaking, I hold that a guy who's kenyan kinyan peres is as if he's kenyan kinyan aguf, right? But in this case, who's the one who holds the kinyan peres? The father. And why is he holding the kinyan peres? He's holding the kinyan peres to keep rights away from his son so that he shouldn't be left at the mercy of his son. And meanwhile, he should be controlling the karka. Very wise. But his ikar desire over here is to convey the whole thing to his son as the Yerusha. So what do you think he held on to? He held on to the minimal rights that would provide him with his parnasa, but he's not trying to assure himself of anything other than the actual income while he's alive. So I might have thought in that case, it's the whole purpose of this transaction is to be able to give over to his son a living will that by definition, a living will achieves a greater hakna in the guf and a lesser holding on to things in the perot. And therefore, perhaps even I would have agreed, Rabbi Yochanan would say, perhaps even I would have agreed that in such a case, even though the son ends up not being alive at the time, but Lamaisa, he had been given this during his lifetime, and it's a greater kinyan over here, the guf, than the perot. Kamash malan, that I need to tell you that even in this case, I hold this as a standard case. There's no deviations where in a particular case we hold that there's a type of kinyan peres that's a lesser kinyan peres. There's no such thing. There's either a kinyan peres or not a kinyan peres. The din of kinyan peres is that kinyan peres is the yikar kinyan. It's a kinyan aguf and zelza. So that you need to know because otherwise you would think that it varies. That's why we needed to discuss this again as far as I'm concerned, says Rabbi Yochanan. And this, so let's see that inside. Amar lach Rabbi Yochanan, it's true that I've already mentioned this, but nonetheless, Avagav de Baalma kinyan peres kinyan aguf dami, you might have thought that Ahacha Yitzrek, Sakatai Tachamina, you might have wanted to say that Avagav Bibrei Achule Achil, perhaps the father here to the son is Meichel, the additional control that he has over it as the one who is in control of the Perot. Kamash Malan, that it's no different. And Reish Lakish also says, I need to discuss this case, you see. Because it's true that Bi Alma Kinyan Peres Lav Kinyan Aguf, right? But this is a very strange case. Because in this case, he's the one that's holding on to the Kinyan Peres. In other words, where do I discuss Kinyan Peres? Where somebody sold Kinyan Peres. Because that's the normal case. It's crazy. Why would somebody sell the Guf and only keep the peres for himself? There's only one case where that's done. That's the case of the living will. That's why it took so long for the world to catch on to this idea. Why it's a new way of giving charitable deductions. Because it's counterintuitive. But where it is very intuitive is where somebody indeed wants to achieve a conveyance where it doesn't affect him in any practical fashion while he's living. So that would normally only be in terms of an inheritance or in terms of the IRS. There'd be no reason why a person would do such a thing under normal circumstances. That's death and taxes. So Mamela, I might have thought that it's tremendous, tremendous difference because since over here he is now the one that's holding on to the payroll. Obviously, all you have is the payroll, so that over there we would say that you're holding on to more than you're giving away when you're giving away the payroll. Doesn't that make sense? You're trying to protect yourself to hold on to the payroll. So maybe over there it's a type of Kenyan payroll which would give him the rights that Rabbi Yochanan sees is the general rights to Kenyan payroll. So I would have said, when a guy is trying to protect his own rights, and he's holding on to the perot, So then, I don't care if it's his son. That's not the point. The point over here is that the purpose of the transaction is to him, to his holding onto the perot for protection. So then, afilo b'mokum brei, nafshe adif alei. I mean, he certainly is trying to protect his own holding. Memela, he didn't let go of what he would normally let go in the kinyan goof, and he's maintaining that in the kinyan perot. Kamash malan, that indeed this case is no different than the standard case of selling the perot. That's all that you can keep for yourself when you, so to speak, sell yourself the perot. It's all the same thing. And I need the Mishnah to make that clear. Eitvei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Once already we enter into the world of Kinyan Peres and Kinyan Aguf, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan now have some of their discussions about the rayas that we've spoken about before, about how exactly this works. So one of the cases that is very close to our heart we've been discussing recently was the case of Nechasai Lecha, the Acharecha Yirash Ploni, the Acharav Yirash Ploni. So a guy over here sets things up in which he's giving a living gift, and he's giving it to this person, and he says, but after you die, so-and-so gets it, and after so-and-so dies, a third individual gets it. So in the event that the first guy dies, then indeed the second guy gets it. Kana sheni. The second guy dies, kana shlishi. Of course, this we had before, that since he used the word yorish in the second column, this was according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, yerusha, and yerusha ain lefs, right? But if it's been given as a matana, so then this works fine. What about if the second guy dies not according to schedule? So this guy's little cozy controlled inheritance doesn't work out because somebody wasn't following instructions. So if the sheni dies b'chaye risha, now we got a problem because the shlishi, he only gave rights to the shlishi through the sheni. So it wasn't as if he said, I'm giving it to all three of you, but as long as you're alive, the other two, and as long as the second guy's alive, the third guy, he didn't say it like that. He said, goes to him, and then from him it goes to him. So once he's mafsik it with the death of the second guy, it goes now to the heirs of the first guy. Now this makes absolutely no sense, says Rabbi Yochanan, according to you, when it goes to the heirs of the first guy. The first guy only had a right to the Paris, no? Now, that's what this is. This is like a living gift. So if you only have the right to the Paris, according to you who holds that Kinyan Paris Lafke Kinyan Aguf, so then it should go back to the giver's heirs, not to the heirs of the first guy. The first guy didn't have anything in it. So how do you explain that? I explain it very well. That in these circumstances, where you gave somebody the rights to something, you were giving him the Iker Kinyan and the Karka, because Kinyan Paris Kinyan Aguf. So Mamela, if he dies and there was nobody else who was supposed to take it, so he remains with it, and now it goes to his heirs. But the way you, Reish Lakish, learn, there should be nothing left. There were no Kinyan Peres left. Fine. Who owns the actual karka? The giver. So then the giver died, and it goes now to his heirs, right? So imita, if you're right, why does it say it goes to the Yorshe HaRishon? It should say it goes to the Yorshe HaNotein. Why does it go to the one who was the one that gave it in the first place? Amale. So Reish Lakish said to Rabbi Yochanan, I hope you're not trying to spring that old one on me. I mean, this is an old story. Kvartirgema Rav Oshaya b'bavel, that acharecha shayni. Rav Oshaya explained that the lashon acharecha does not mean a living will. A living will is never said with the lashon acharecha. Acharecha implies that it's yours completely. It's just that it's yours for a time. Not that the payers are yours. It's not working the way it works where somebody's trying to protect himself. He's giving it now. So if he's giving it now, he's giving the whole thing now. He's just saying, this is a gift until such and such a time. That time, I don't know the schedule, but when you die, it goes to the second guy. So what are you comparing it to? Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf? It has nothing to do with that. Here, it's mamish, an actual Kinyan on the karka. It's not in the gift. That's all. Mamela, if there never was a second guy to get it, so the gift was a gift, remains a gift. That's all. What's after with Kinyan Peres? And the truth is, V'chein Rami Rabba Bar Avunah Kabeid Rab, actually, wasn't only said over there by Rav Oshaya. It was something that Rabba Bar Avunah had presented to Rav as a problem, that it should be a raya to Kinyan Peres being Kinyan Aguf. And Rav also said exactly the same thing, that a case of acharecha is not the equivalent of me'ayom v'la'achar mita. It's the equivalent of giving away something completely with a condition as to the time that the gift is chal. And so memela, not nogea arsugi. Tomorrow we shall see more of the exciting issue, kinyan perot, kinyan aguf tam.